This is the Breaker.News podcast for April 22nd, 2018. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, regular features such as the Is It Just Me commentary, Around the Rim, headlines from around the Pacific Rim, Cascadia Calling, headlines from around the Pacific Northwest. The Big Deal feature, a former Alberta lawmaker says the bid for the 2026 Winter Olympics could ruin Calgary. I interviewed Tom Sindlinger of No Calgary Olympics. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or did the BC NDP government's much-ballyhooed big-money ban backfire? Last fall, the Horgan Horde patted itself on the back to the point of bruising when it banned corporations and labor unions from donating to political campaigns, both provincial and municipal. But it created one loophole that will allow for third-party political action committees to raise as much as they want. It created another loophole that allows local parties to raise as much as they want from corporations and unions to keep those parties going between elections, and they don't have to report to the public about who gave what and how much. Was this a gift by the NDP to their friends in Vision Vancouver and the Burnaby Citizens Association? It sure looks like it. Municipal Affairs Minister Selena Robinson sheepishly said last week that her staff is looking into plugging the loophole that allows big money to continue. What do you think? Email me, bob@thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. First stop, in the South China Morning Post, Neil Fraser reports, Macau issues cryptocurrency crime warning after link to former Triad boss emerges. Concerns over a Macau cryptocurrency firm, backed by a notorious former gangster, and which has links to the company behind the Facebook data mining scandal, have prompted monetary chiefs in the city to issue a warning over possible fraud and criminal activities. Macau Dragon Group, a firm associated with Broken Tooth Wan Kwok Koi, employed the British company Cambridge Analytica to promote Dragon Coin, a new virtual currency created to help gamblers transfer money to Macau casinos. Wan is one of Asia's most infamous organized crime figures and spent more than 10 years in jail for an array of gangland crimes, including being leader of the 14K Triad Group in Macau. In the Japan Times, Yuji Nakamura and Hideki Sagike of Bloomberg report, Nintendo's $30 billion rally now depends on $70 cardboard pianos. Nintendo company got its start in 1889 as a successful manufacturer of Hanafuda playing cards made out of stiff paper. Now, the game maker is embracing the same materials for its next trick. The Kyoto-based company has started selling an unusual collection of attachments for its hybrid Switch tablet console, cardboard add-ons called Nintendo Labo. Priced at $70 and $80, the build-it-yourself cardboard kits, with accompanying software, will let users transform the Switch into a miniature piano, motorcycle handlebars, robot exoskeleton, and other objects. The goal is broadening the Switch's appeal beyond the core gamers who fueled its estimated 17 million in first-year unit sales. Players younger than 16 accounted for just 10% of Switch users last year, according to Nintendo. And in the press on stuff.co.nz, Julian Lee reports, Tiny West Coast Council's public relations spend angers councillor. One of New Zealand's smallest councils has called in a public relations company to respond to media queries. The Westland District Council, which serves a region of fewer than 9,000 people, announced this week that its media queries would be handled by Christchurch-based Convergence, the South Island's largest public relations company. Company partner Steve Atwood is the contact for media queries for the West Coast Council. Convergence looks after companies and organizations like the Lyttelton Port, Mike Pirro Real Estate, and New Zealand Rugby League. Similar-sized councils around New Zealand do not tend to have dedicated communications staff. The WDC has been under investigation by the Serious Fraud Office for more than a year, and the Auditor General since last December. Last year, a stuff investigation revealed how a new business run by a cake decorator, which had no track record in waste management, won a WDC project to build a $7 million sewage plant in Franz Josef. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. This is Cascadia calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In the Olympian, Rachel LaCourte of Associated Press reports, lottery deputy director ousted after ethics investigation. The deputy director of Washington's lottery, Jim Warwick, has been ousted following an outside investigation into ethics complaints. Warwick and other lottery employees accepted drinks and food from a vendor, International Game Technology, who had a contract with the agency, and that several employees likely got free hotel rooms during a work trip that coincided with the South by Southwest Festival in Austin, Texas. The ethics report came as a result of issues that were previously raised with the investigator during a hostile workplace investigation into former lottery director Bill Hansen. That report found that Hansen had treated female employees differently than their male counterparts, calling them criers and excluding them from key discussions. In the North Shore News, Joanna Connolly reports, Ultralux home on private peninsula listed for $24.9 million. A Caulfield waterfront property is up for sale at $24,998,000, the most expensive West Vancouver home available on the multiple listing service. Described by the listing agent as a world-class waterfront residence, the 8,500-square-foot home was built in 1990 but renovated in 2006. It is the former residence of ex-Canucks owner Frank Griffiths, and it is currently registered to Seaside Properties. It has four bedrooms, six bathrooms, a grand foyer, huge living and entertaining spaces, a state-of-the-art media room, a five-car garage, and a high-tech boathouse with a 32-foot yacht thrown into the deal. The spectacular home is part of an exclusive gated 14-home enclave called Seaside Place, which was founded by the late Frank Griffiths, and it sits on its own private peninsula jutting into the mouth of the Howe Sound, just north of Lighthouse Park. The community has a high-tech security system and a stratified common area for the heated roads, gardens, and security. The newly listed house enjoys the prime spot in the community, perched on its own mini peninsula at the end of the bluff, with more than 500 feet of shoreline and private beach on three sides. Interestingly, four of the 14 homes in Seaside Place are currently up for sale. In Nanaimo News Now, Canadian Press reports, BC communities await marine spill compensation years after incidents. Despite polluter pay laws in Canada, local governments and agencies are still waiting to recover costs after a 2015 fuel spill in English Bay. The City of Vancouver and Vancouver Aquarium are collectively waiting on nearly $700,000 in losses related to a 2015 leak of bunker fuel. Canadian Coast Guard spent more than $2.4 million in response to the leak from the grain vessel Marathassa in 2015. Vancouver City Hall spent $500,000 alone on the cleanup. Vancouver Aquarium spent $180,000 on environmental testing, because it draws its salt water from English Bay. Transport Canada, which oversees spill response, said in a statement that under the current regime, ship owners are strictly liable for spills, up to a limit based on the size of the vessel, and all vessels must have insurance for oil pollution damages. The Marathassa is facing 10 environment-related charges in BC Provincial Court, including allegations it violated the Fisheries Act and the Canadian Environment Protection Act. Hearings are scheduled through May. Also, we reported this week in the Breaker.News that Mayor Gregor Robertson rewarded Vision Vancouver's 2014 campaign cameraman more than $50,000 in taxpayer contracts to shoot videos for the mayor's office. Robertson spent almost 2 months traveling outside Vancouver in 2017, despite the affordable housing crisis and despite the opioid epidemic which is affecting the city. And we found the man who coined the Vancouver model, the term for BC's brand of casino, real estate, and drugs money laundering. Read all about John Langdale, the Australian professor of criminology, in the Breaker.news. This is The Big Deal on the Breaker.news podcast. 30 years after the Calgary 1988 Winter Olympics, the Stampede City is pondering a return of the five-ring circus. Calgary City Council voted 9-6 on April 16th to carry on with its bid for the 2026 Winter Olympics. But a growing number of Albertans who oppose the Games want the fate of the bid to be decided in a plebiscite. One of those voices is Tom Sindlinger, an economist who was a Conservative member of the legislature from 1979 to 1984, when Alberta's boomtown was planning for the 1988 Games. The Alberta Sport Hall of Famer loves the Olympics, but not the price tag. He is part of the No Calgary Olympics group. Tom Sindlinger spoke to The Breaker via Skype from Calgary. He says the people, not the politicians, must decide the bid.
First point I would like to make is that we are for the Olympic spirit. What we are against is the Olympic-sized cost of the Games. So it's not that we're against the Games, we're against the cost of the Games. And as mentioned in your introduction, we cannot be certain of what the cost will be for the Games. I know that in Vancouver we have reports that show that the initial estimates for the Vancouver Olympic Games was around $2 billion, and it ended up to be around $8 billion. Now, in Calgary, we're starting out with an original estimate of $4.6 billion. And to put that in perspective, I kind of pull out my wallet. I know what $20 is, but I don't know what $1 billion is. But I do know that there's 500,000 taxpayers in Calgary. So just by doing some simple arithmetic, this isn't sophisticated economics or anything like that. If you take $4.6 billion and divide it by 500,000 taxpayers in Calgary, you're looking at about $8,000 per Calgary taxpayer. Now, to me, that's quite exorbitant. If we took all that money that we're planning on spending on the Olympics, we could actually build 7 National Hockey League arenas and have enough money left over to buy the Flames franchise. So this is a lot of money we're talking about, and it means a lot to Albertans. Now, I just talked about the tax impact to Albertans, but the provincial government is expected to throw in 1/3 of that Olympic cost, and that amounts to about $3,000 per every Albertan. So the Alberta government has taken a political stance and said that unless Calgary has a plebiscite on these Olympic costs, the Alberta government won't contribute any money to the cost. And people are saying, well, if Calgary taxpayers who are paying the bill get to have their voice in a plebiscite, then Alberta taxpayers should be treated equally. That is, if they have to pay a tax for Calgary's Olympics, well, then they should have a say in a plebiscite as well.
The Olympic business model has changed considerably since 1988. Security is now one of the biggest costs. A major issue with all mega events is the lack of transparency. British Columbia's Auditor General did not do a final report after the 2010 Winter Olympics in Vancouver, and the organizing committee's minutes and financial information are behind lock and key at the city archives until 2025. I asked Tom Sindlinger that if the IOC were to choose Calgary when it votes in September 2019, can Calgary's organizing committee keep anywhere near the estimated $4.6 billion budget, and could these games be organized with any transparency?
First of all, you referred to the 1988 Olympics. I was in the Legislative Assembly when the planning and the money was appropriated for those Olympics. And at that time, there was so much money, Alberta didn't know what to do with it. So they set up a bucket over here called the Alberta Heritage Savings Trust Fund and put all their surpluses in that bucket. And then that even wasn't large enough. They had to set up another bucket for all the surplus money. The question in those days was, what can we do with all this money? It's a different era today. We do not have the money that we had then. The city of Calgary has already maxed out its credit card, and the Alberta government is only not that far behind it. We don't have the money today to spend on an Olympic Games. So the answer to your question, quite simply, is although there was money then, there is not money today. There is no money for the Olympic Games.
While Calgary is getting ready to officially bid for 2026, its NDP Premier Rachel Notley and Prime Minister Justin Trudeau are talking about investing billions of dollars in Kinder Morgan to make the Trans Mountain Pipeline expansion a reality. I asked Tom Sindlinger, can Alberta afford to put money into a private company's pipeline and put money into an Olympics to subsidize the Swiss-based IOC?
The glory days for the oil booms are over, and they're not going to be returning. And as in regard to Alberta or the federal government putting money into pipeline, that is not going to happen, period. Now, I can say that from my legislative experience. I've worked on these things all my life. Unfortunately, I'm an economist, so I can add up the numbers, and it doesn't make any sense at all to put money into a pipeline. From a government point of view, the government doesn't have the money, and it doesn't have to do that because there are enough resorts to the court, the constitutional imperatives that say that Alberta or anyone else can ship whatever they want across interprovincial boundaries. And so it's going to happen. This gambit right now about putting money into pipelines by governments is nothing more than a short-term political ploy. It's like the Premier of Alberta saying, all right, we're going to boycott BC wine. And she did that for a couple of weeks and then said, oh, no, we can't do that anymore. Yes, we showed you guys in BC. So all it is a political ploy from time to time. And there is nothing that will ever substantiate the putting of money, Alberta government money or federal government money, into the Trans Mountain Pipeline. It'll either stand on its own on profit loss, private enterprise principles.
There is a group of Calgary City Councillors that are against the bid. And I asked Tom Sindlinger, are there forces out there trying to block the public from getting a definitive say on the bid in a plebiscite?
And it's my opinion, and just my opinion, and it's that from being a lifetime political observer and participant in government, that there's a silent majority in this city that opposed the Winter Games being held in Calgary for the simple reason, not that they were opposed to Olympic Games, but we're opposed to paying for them. The Olympic-sized cost is outside our means. And inside Calgary, I believe there's a silent majority that feels that way. Now, if you take one step out of the city, just one step out of the city, and ask other people around the province, which I do all the time, if they would support paying $3,000 for the Calgary Olympics, the response they will give you is not very polite. They will not support a Calgary Olympics. And if Calgarians have the right to express their opinion about paying for the Olympics, then I believe all Albertans who will also have to pay for them will have that same right to express their opinion. And again, we're saying yes to the Olympic spirit, but no to the Olympic-sized cost. And we'd like to discuss that as broadly as we can. And we have to do it across Canada as well, because when we have Olympics in Calgary, if we have Olympics in Calgary, you sitting there in Vancouver are also going to pay a federal tax that will go towards that cost in Calgary as well.
That was Tom Sindlinger of No Calgary Olympics on the Breaker.News podcast. You can find his website at noyycolympics.org. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Brian Cunahan of North Vancouver, the Seabus Samaritan. On April 12th, the District of North Vancouver engineer was on the sea bus in the middle of Burrard Inlet. A man was suffering a heart attack, and Cunahan jumped into action with CPR. Cunahan saved the life of the 30-year-old man. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for April 22nd, 2018. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know, on April 22nd, 1970, it was the first Earth Day? On April 22nd, 1977, the first live phone call on fiber optic cables. Well, now you know. Send your feedback. Send your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.